Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on episode 290 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Kia Niro EV, the Toyota Sequoia, the Mercedes-Benz EQE AMG, the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe, the Kia EV9, a first drive of the Nissan Ariya eForce, taking a ride with Waymo in San Francisco, and the VW ID2 All concept. All that and more coming up next. This is episode 290 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abual-Samich from Guidehouse Insights.
I am Nicole Wakelin from Newsweek's Fast Women podcast.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from, let's say, The Verge. I don't know if the article's gone up, but I just wrote something for The Verge.
Okay.
That counts, then.
That's enough.
I just
you've written stuff for The Verge before, so there's stuff
written,
that's live.
Yeah. So we believe you.
They have a bunch of it. They have like four or five. Three? Yeah. I think they have three articles that I know are live. Maybe four.
Okay. All right. Nicole, what have you been driving?
I am driving the Jeep Grand Cherokee Summit Reserve 4xe. It's a big name.
It is.
It's hard to fit on social media posts. I'm like, that's too many words. It's like, that's
you
all
can leave out the trim levels. Just say Grand Cherokee 4xe.
So I'm driving that, which is not an inexpensive car. So the base price on this is $72,595. And with all the extras on there, it's $81,380. So it's almost, it's pushing $82,000. So it's not cheap, but.
Well, I don't think we have any inexpensive cars this week.
I think mine's actually bonkers. Am I actually the like hoi polloi car? Am I the cheap one? I might be.
I have one cheaper car.
Okay. I know Robbie's got more expensive once he figures out how to read the Monroney.
Give me one.
You have to build it. It's so hard. So that's what I'm driving this week. I like this. I mean, I already like the Grand Cherokee. I think it's a good vehicle. And it does that neat Jeep thing. That is a Jeep thing where you have this beautiful SUV. I mean, this has all sorts of cool stuff on the inside. This Summit Reserve trim, it has leather seats and they're quilted. It's actually, I think, Palermo leather, which is the coolest of leathers.
Is that better than Napa leather?
Which is better? Is Palermo better than Napa?
Actually, let me rephrase that. Is there even such a thing as Palermo leather? Or is it just a marketing term like Corinthian leather?
Okay. Is it from Palermo?
Well, you know,
do they make leather in Palermo?
Okay, wait. Well, you guys riff on that. What is Palermo? Palermo is a small workshop in... Oh, no, that's the Palermo Leather Workshop. I think it's real.
You must make it there,
though. Oh, okay. Is it actually in Palermo, Italy?
It's listed on very many things. I Googled Palermo Leather, and I got a million different things that are Palermo Leather. I don't know. I feel like... What is Palermo leather is a thick leather of high quality with a fine grain. It is very fine grained and elegant. It is just provided... This is clearly not from... Oh, it's... From an Australian site? Doesn't sound like English even. It is just provided with a slight and transparent finish so that the natural charisma is maintained, but is protected for everyday use as well. That
charisma.
Sounds very, is AU? Isn't it .au? Is that Australia?
Yeah, that's Australia.
Okay. Yeah. This is the something, coriumleather.com.au. That is the first search result. So there you go. It's a real thing. So okay. Anyway.
I'll take your word for it.
Maybe from Australia. We don't know.
From Australia.
If it's really on the internet, it must be true, right?
Oh, no. This one says, now the next one, tanned in northern Italy on large-scale English bull hides. I think what we have established is we don't know exactly what it is, but that it is real.
It's probably an Australian distributor for Italian leather.
For an Italian leather.
So it's an Italian leather. Let's just say Italian leather.
Okay.
Okay, so the Jeep Grand Cherokee Summit Reserve 4xe has Italian leather inside. It's very lovely. It has lots of quilting, like it's even on the door panels. It has that very sort of premium look. And this also gets real wood trims. It's along the dash. It's even some on the steering wheel. So you definitely have that sort of more premium feel to it. You know, it's $82,000. You got to have it feel like it's something. You can't have it not look like an $82,000 car. And it does. And you've got, I love that the rear seats standard, you have the quad zone automatic climate control or whatever. So the rear seat passengers control it themselves, because you can never get everybody comfortable. I want everybody in a big SUV to have their own climate control, because when they're tiny cars, probably the front and the rear passengers aren't going to notice that much of a difference. But in a big car, the front seat passengers can be like roasting and the people in back are frozen. So I think it's nice that you have that. Sounds like a silly thing until you've been stuck in a car where people are fighting over that kind of stuff.
Especially if you have Palermo leather.
You don't want to be cold or too hot with your Palermo leather.
Who wants to sit on cold leather? You ever done that? You're like, oh,
nobody. Nobody. Yeah.
Or hot leather is too hot as well.
Right? Yeah, when you're wearing like shorts, you just...
It has to be the right temperature. Yeah. So you get all of the, you get a 10.1 inch infotainment touchscreen. It's got the usual like Apple CarPlay, Android Auto. You've got 4G LTE Wi-Fi connectivity. It has a really cool, and I think it might be an extra. I'm double checking right. Yeah. Yes, it is. A 19 speaker high performance audio system. It's the Macintosh audio, which has such cool, like the little, it looks, it
did
just
turn on the gauges.
I did not turn on the gauges. I know I should have played around with the gauges. I didn't play with a little gauge because then I get distracted. Meters, I'm like, ooh, the little meters watching the sound bounce back and forth. So, I mean, this is a pretty well-equipped vehicle even before you add on all the extra stuff. And the thing about it is it's, you know, because it's a Jeep, it balances really well between having, you know, it's a large two-row SUV. It has, plenty of room for everybody. It has... good features, and it's really, really off-road capable. Like you can genuinely take this off-road if you want to. It's not something that, you know, you can do in every car. And a lot of the cars that are really off-road capable, there's a lot of brands out there that say they can do it, but they can't. And sometimes you have to get really, really pricey before you can do it. You know, you go up to Land Rovers and stuff that have, you know, that comparable like heavy duty off-road capability, as opposed to sort of like a halfway kind of off-road. Like we can take you across the field to your kid's state fair field trip, but we can't really take you beyond much past that.
Like if the kids are trapped like in the wilderness, that you're not going to take them. But if they're trapped at the fair,
then you're good. You can go pick them up at the fair. But if they're trapped in like a log cabin in the middle of nowhere, say goodbye to your children. Yeah. So see, this will save your kids. So buy
one. You can make more.
Right. You can make more. And because it's a plug-in hybrid, you do get better fuel economy than you would with just a straight gas engine. So this goes for 26 miles per charge on electric only, which is not as good as some, but it's not fabulous, but it's not, I mean, I'll take the 26 miles, you know.
It's a biggie.
It's a big, she's a big little car. She's big. So you're not going to get.
Well, also, compared to a gas only Grand Cherokee, even when you run out of that 26 miles of electric range, that hybrid's going to be a lot more efficient than either the V6 or V8 Grand Cherokee.
Right. So this gets what it's saying is the gas and electric combined is 56 MPGE. Gas only, it's 23 miles per gallon. So you're getting good. I mean, you're getting exceptional.
That's 3 miles more than your Wrangler.
It probably is a little bit more than my Wrangler. My Wrangler's older. It's not as efficient. It weighs, more. Does a Wrangler Rubicon weigh? Once you put all the Rubicon-ness on it, it's a thing.
Once you Rube it up.
Once you Rubicon eyes, is that a word? Rubiconize it?
Well, you also have to keep in mind that the aerodynamics of a Wrangler are slightly less optimized than a Grand Cherokee.
Yeah, it's just
driving on
the
road with a box on top of a smaller box
on top of a box, and and then you remove pieces of it, and then your box has open air and is even more airflow issues over it, and so it is a very inefficient but fun box to drive. Yes, this is slightly more efficient and more aerodynamically designed. So I like the Grand Cherokee. I think it's a good choice if you want that sort of rugged ability. We had it, we got 14 inches of snow. We had a nor'easter that hit. And, people think of it just as an off-road vehicle, but Jeeps are hugely popular in New England. That's a large part of the reason why when you get 14 inches of snow and you have to get into or out of your driveway, and it's not so much the snow that's on the road, although that's great to have that kind of capability and the extra ground clearance, but it's that snowbank that's at the end of your driveway, or the snowbank where the plow Yeah, where the plow has like gone by and you have to cross out into the main road and you're like, there is now 3.5 feet of snow in front of me. How do I get through this? Because they will go by inevitably. You're at a stoplight, like coming out of the grocery store, plow comes by. You're like, well, now what the heck am I supposed to do? Right. Yeah. That's it. It will get you through that. You will get through that kind of thing. So it's a great vehicle, whether it is the off-road part that you really want for off-roadiness, or if it's just that you want something that's capable enough to handle really, truly deep snow so that you don't get stuck or think like, I can't go out today because that plow could come by any minute. So I'm a fan. It is pricey. Like I said, it's $81,000 equipped like this. But if you get, you know, the base on this is $73,000. So you can get it's still a premium price, but when you know, it's not outrageous given what it can do, because you're getting that capability that you don't get with every SUV this size.
So according to the car comparison thing on KBB.com, the curb weight of a Grand Cherokee 4xe Summit Reserve SUV
yes.
is 5,507 pounds.
Okay.
The Jeep Wrangler Unlimited 4xe Rubicon Sport Utility four-door SUV is 5,222 pounds. So almost 300 pounds less than the Grand Cherokee.
Okay. So 300 pounds. So not a huge amount less.
Yeah. Not much less. Jeez. And also...
Way smaller yes. and a box.
Yeah.
A little bit less, and it's a box.
And it has all kinds of appendages sticking out, you know, that stick into the air.
Random bits and pieces and yeah. great big wonky fenders. And
yeah. So
all sorts of stuff that like every engineer is like, no, the aerodynamics, don't kill it. Too bad. It's a Wrangler.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. Robbie, what do you got?
So I drove most of the week. The whole 2023 AMG EQE sedan. So this is their electric performance EQE. I like it better than the EQS.
Really?
It's smaller. It just feels it feels lighter. It feels a bit more nimble. It still has all wheel drive or all wheel steering. It has all wheel mm-hmm. drive, obviously, but also has all wheel steering. So it's already a bit smaller, and then it just feels smaller when you go around corners. I tend to like smaller vehicles overall, to be honest, because I just like the little nimbleness of a vehicle versus sort of this big hulking thing. You get most of the EQS that you know stuff that you're going to get anyway, like all the stuff that you're going to use like all the time. It's already on the EQE. So I like this car. It's quick. It has some insane amount, 701. Pound feet of torque, and then it has a boost function where you have 738 pound feet of torque. So it's just like, woo! It's so yeah, it's fun to drive.
Wait, how's that go again? What's it like?
Woo!
Okay, just double checking.
I do wish that Mercedes had gone to an 800 volt system. This thing's only going to charge at 170 kilowatts, but that's, I mean,
the reality is that's probably all you're ever going to get out of most Electrify America stations anyway.
Yeah, it's sad because yep. it's true. But it's, yeah, you know what? You're fine. You can just. So I drove this, and before I could do any actual testing, I had been driving it back and forth to Napa. It has the one I had has these fancy, expensive 21-inch AMG Y-spoke wheels. They're in black. So your sidewall is like, I don't know. It's just like they just stuck a belt.
About
like
a quarter of an inch high.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is great, you know, 90% of the time in the Bay Area. The Bay Area has been getting a lot of rain. And that rain mm-hmm. means that the little pothole becomes a big pothole. And I was driving this vehicle to drive around in the Hummer EV SUV. And on the way, it was dark because I had to get up really early to get there in time. And there was a pothole that I didn't see because it was shrouded by rain and darkness.
Oh, no.
And I busted I didn't break the wheel. The wheel was fine, but the tires shot. So I had about a 4-inch slice in the side. In the sidewall.
I'm familiar with that problem.
Yeah. So I'm just like, I'm driving and all of a sudden the car's all bim and it pops up the tire, how much pressure you have in each tire. And each tire is like, oh, 38, 38, 38, zero.
Oh, geez. That's not so good.
I tried using the Mercedes-Benz little pump because I couldn't see the hole. I thought maybe I just de-beaded it a little bit and it just kind of popped out. Maybe I can air it up because I'm in a hurry. That didn't work. And then they have like a little fix-a-flat that they give you that you attach to the pump, their little pump that they give you. And that didn't work. And I still couldn't, because it was dark and it was raining, I still couldn't see the hole. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to drive across the street to the Chevron station, park there, and then use their, you know, industrial strength tire inflator. And I put it in and I look over and I'm like, oh, and they're just shooting back out of my face. And it's shooting out the, you know, that white fix-a-flat goo, you know.
Yes.
It's like shooting that out. I'm like, well, that's a problem. So that's how I ended my week with the EQE. I had to wait like 3 or 4 hours for them to be able to pick me up because it was too early. I tried to call. There's no one to call because it's really early. No. Fleet company's not around. I'm not going to call the guy and wake him up and be like, hey, I'm stuck here. You know, let him sleep. He's got enough to deal with. So I'm just like, all right. And I had to call GMC and they were like, it's fine. Just get here when you get here. No, it all worked out. But if you have to be trapped in a car in a rainstorm, a Mercedes is awesome.
It's not a bad car to be trapped in for a while.
Yeah, I just put the seat back and I was and the Chevron station was a combination McDonald's. And I typically don't eat at McDonald's, but I'm like, hey, I'm here. I'll have a McDonald's. But I was waiting for it to stop raining. And my phone tells me when it's going to rain and when it's going to stop raining. And it kept saying, it's going to stop raining. And then it just wouldn't.
Good luck with that. Rain forever.
Rain forever. So I don't have – I didn't do – I wasn't able to do
Tuesday?
A rain. That was on – yeah, it was on Tuesday.
Tuesday was a really bad day, wasn't it?
Yeah, because I was driving from Healdsburg back to San Francisco on Tuesday.
Oh, that's right. They canceled part of your drive, right?
Well, that was the day – we drove the day before. We drove the Aria the day before. So we didn't have that problem. But, yeah, I was – that same morning, I was driving back to San Francisco for some meetings. And, yeah, it was coming down hard.
It was not messing around.
I know for Aria, they had like two legs to your drive day, and they canceled the second part because they said it was really bad. Like, nope, there's too much flooding. And I kind of, you know, you always kind of think it's, you know, an abundance of caution. It's not so bad. Well, I happened to be the one who drove the day after this. And when I drove it, it was open and we could drive it, but there were just these flooded signs everywhere. Like, and you could see like still like mud that they had just literally like, well, we'll take a truck and push the mud out of the way, but we'll clean this up later. It was crazy. Like the road was just a disaster. Yeah. It was really bad.
Later that day out in the Hummer, I went to a road because they just gave me the Hummer because I was like off. I was off book by that point.
a little behind schedule.
I took it to a road that I had already driven in with the Aria and the EQE, and it was just – there's nothing. It was just dry road.
Yeah.
The day before, by the next morning, it was completely flooded. So I had to drive – and I was driving the Hummer, the SUV, and I was just
– right through. Yeah.
I don't think that violates
It's heavy enough that hydroplaning is not really an issue, I take it.
Yeah.
I think you can only worry if there was enough water that it was deep and heavy enough just like to pick it up off the road and then you have problems.
Yeah. So it was, we got a lot of rain. So the AMG EQE sedan, I'm hoping I'll get it back at some point in the future. I have a very busy schedule so I can finish.
I take it they just flatbedded it back to
They just flatbedded it. And so now I have, you know, I have a bunch of other vehicles that are lined up. And so I have to like shuffle things around and whatnot, but for a few days just driving around up and down to Napa and just around town, it was great. I really liked it. Starting price is $106,900 with all the little extra bits, $118,550. So yeah, you're really paying for that fancy AMG-ness. Did y'all want to guess the destination delivery charge? This is a Mercedes.
Let me remind you, this is a Mercedes before you answer.
$995.
I was going to go with $1,295, so I'll still go with $1,295.
Oh, Sammy gives $1,150.
Mm.
So
okay.
less than you expect. Wait, because people charge more.
Since I forgot to do it.
Well, they make up for it on the MSRP.
Yeah. What do you think it was for the Jeep, you guys?
Oh gosh. $1,600.
Sam?
$1,695, I think.
Sam wins at $1,795 for the Jeep.
Oh, okay. I couldn't remember if it was 16 or 17.
Sam's on a roll, man.
I knew it was up there. Stellantis is like, you know, they're the worst
they're,
on the.
They're crazy.
Our charge only $20,000, but our delivery fees are $80,000.
Yeah, $80,000 delivery fee, gentlemen.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't give you the range either. They don't have the range hasn't been tested yet on this vehicle, so yeah. Sorry.
Sorry. Wah, adequate.
Wah. All right. Well, I had before I went to California to drive the Aria with Robbie, I had the Toyota Sequoia. And the Sequoia is quite large. It's a big honking SUV.
I mean, it's named after a giant tree.
That's true.
I want that in the ad. I want it to be like the Toyota Sequoia, big honking vehicle. Like I would buy that.
And it has a very, very large grill, which we've talked about before in the context of the Tundra. You know, it's based on the Tundra platform. Oddly, this time, you know, the first generation Sequoia, when they built that, they put an independent rear suspension on it. You know, while the Tundra still had solid rear axle, this time I think, you know, they probably figured, well, you know, we don't sell that many Sequoias compared to, you know, the number of Tahoes and Suburbans and Escalades and Sierra and Yukons and everything that GM sells, or even the number that that Ford sells of Expeditions and Navigators. So let's invest a little bit less. So they went back to a solid rear axle on this, but it does have the same coil spring setup, the multi-link coil spring setup that's on the Tundra. So it's not too bad. And they, you know, they seem to have done a pretty good job on shaping the floor pan. Cause you know, one of the reasons why they've, you know, companies that manufacturers have gone to the IRS on the, for the rear end of these big SUVs is, you know, when you have a solid axle, you've got to leave room for the axle to actually move up and down because the differential doesn't stay in one place. It moves up and down with the axle. And so, you know, that means the floor where the axle is has to be up higher, which in the past is typically meant that, you know, on older generations of Tahoes and Yukons and Suburbans and Expeditions, you, if you got stuck in the third row seat, you know, the third row was basically mounted on the floor and you had that very knees up seating position. And that was not real pleasant. In this case, you know, they've got the axle far enough back that they were able to shape the floor such that, you know, you still you have a more normal seating position in this. So it's actually not really any worse than the previous generation Sequoia. In terms
not any
of
worse.
Not any no. worse.
Well, I mean, which is to say, it's actually, you know, it's pretty decent.
Slightly better.
Yeah. No, it's okay. It's about the same. Oh. It feels about the same, which is pretty good. There's nothing wrong with sitting in the third row. The downside, though, is the floor, you know, behind the seat, behind the third row seats, is actually a pretty small area, surprisingly small area for an SUV this size. You know, right now I've got a Rivian R1T or R1S, sorry, in the driveway, and it's got much more cargo space behind the third row than the Sequoia does. The Sequoia's cargo space, you like, for example, you know, on some of the competitors, you can put carry-on, you know, standard carry-on bags on their side, you know, and stack like four or five of them across, you know, on their side. This one is too shallow to put a carry-on bag on its side. So you have to turn it sideways and put it up against the back of the seat. So there's not a lot of cargo space behind that third row seat in the Sequoia. You know, the rest, you know, this one had the iForce Max powertrain, which is their hybrid powertrain, which has plenty of power. There's no shortage of power in this thing. 437 horsepower, 583 foot-pounds of torque. It's a similar configuration to Ford's Power Boost system. So it's a twin-turbo V6, 3.5 liters, and an electric motor sandwiched between the engine and transmission. And, you know, roughly similar. I think the Power Boost setup has slightly more power, slightly less torque, but it's in the ballpark. It's close enough to be a wash. But the Toyota on the Sequoia, and previously when I drove the same thing on the Tundra, I was not particularly impressed with the fuel economy of this thing. It's rated, it's EPA rated at 19 city, 22 highway, 20 combined. I never really got much over 17.
Ouch.
You know, so it's not particularly good fuel economy. Yeah, it's got, you know, plenty of towing capacity though. I think, you know, depending on the configuration, you can get up to almost 10,000 pounds of towing capacity. So it's in the, you know, it's comparable to the others. The interior, you know, the front row is basically the same as a Tundra. So you've got that nice big 14-inch touchscreen. You still have some physical controls for some of the climate stuff. I'm still not sold on Toyota's decision with their new infotainment not to have any kind of split screen configuration where you can have map and media player on the screen at the same time. But thankfully it does have support for wireless Android Auto and wireless CarPlay, both of which allow you to do exactly that. So, you know, you can basically ignore the Toyota interface if you so desire. Let's see, decent audio system, 12.3-inch digital cluster. The one I had was the Capstone, which is Toyota's new top trim level for the big pickups and SUVs. And they are, it's got 3-zone climate control and all kinds of other stuff. Smart key with push button start. Basically, it's loaded with everything on this one. And pretty much everything you could want is in there. I can't imagine too many other things that you might want on this thing, except maybe massaging seats. There's no massaging seats.
Second row or just in general?
Just even on the first row.
Really?
You sound so shocked. Really? What kind of madness is this?
I mean, you're sort of like, it's a third row and you're giving them the, like, this is the best of the best. And everyone, yeah, for best of the best, like, here's some massaging seats.
They are heated and ventilated. You know,
do you guys
so you
use the massaging seats in a vehicle? Like, I use the heated seats all the time.
If I'm driving for more than an hour or so, I'll turn on the massaging seats.
I always turn them on, and then all of a sudden I'm like, I'm tired of being poked in the back and the butt and the neck.
I'm always yelling at the car to do it. It's just, come on, kids, keep going, because it turns off. Because it doesn't. They don't.
Oh, the heated steering wheel does that. It turns off, and I'm like, no, my hands are not hot enough. Turn back on, dang it.
And they turn them off, I think, just so you don't wear out the machine.
Probably
the little engines that are like.
Is it like when you're only supposed to be in a like a hot tub for so many minutes before you get out? Is it
kind
the same
of
thing?
Yeah.
You can only get the massage in a car for so long before they're like, no, you need to take a break and pay attention to the road and not be this comfortable. Yeah,
stop being so relaxed.
Stop being relaxed. Get tense. Drive.
So that's the Toyota Sequoia four-wheel drive Capstone hybrid. Price tag, total price tag, $80,906.
So it's so comparable with the Cherokee.
Yeah.
Or the Ranch. Mm-hmm. What would you drive? You had to,
I have Grand Cherokee 4xe. Grand Cherokee Summit Reserve 4xe. Let's get it
does
right.
Does it have massage seats? Because I feel like it does.
Wait a minute. Does it? I gotta look. Now I can't remember. Wait. I'm searching the Monroney.
Massage.
The Summit Reserve's also probably got the passenger side display, which you don't get.
Yeah. It does. It does have the passenger side display. I didn't play with the massaging seats because I'm not a huge. Oh, wait. Power. That's standard, too, on this trim. Power front passenger seat with back massager.
There you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So guesses on the delivery charge for this $81,000 Sequoia?
14.
Oh, I was going to say $14.95. I'm sticking with it.
You win, Nicole. It's $15.95.
Man, I'm on a roll of losing today. I have been on the road since 6 a.m., though. That's my excuse. I'm just
dumb. I'm taking this win. I beat you.
I got road dumb.
All right.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia.
So I also had another car that I was driving while I was in California that, you know, instead of relying on Nissan to pick me up at the airport and drive me up to Healdsburg and then back again.
Could have called me. I would just drove you around.
You had some stuff to do on Tuesday though. And I had some meetings to attend to on Tuesday. I got a Kia Niro EV. The Niro EV Wave, which is, you know, so this is the new Niro. A few weeks back, I had the plug-in hybrid. This is the battery electric version. It doesn't have the full EGMP hardware platform in there, which means, you know, it's basically the same, same configuration that's in Robbie's Kona EV and in the previous generation Niro EV, which is fine. It's a 150 kilowatt, 201 horsepower electric motor driving the front wheels, 65 kilowatt hour lithium ion battery pack. The charge port is in the grill, which a lot of people seem to like, and, you know, makes it easy in most cases, you know, to just pull up to a charger and plug in, you know, instead of backing in or trying to find the right and just pull right up to the charger. And assuming you can find a charger that will actually work, then that
small caveat.
Yes. Which we'll get to in a minute. It only charges at 100 kilowatts, maximum. So it's faster than the previous one, which was limited to 75 kilowatts, but, you know, not as fast as, you know, some of the latest and greatest, certainly not as fast as, you know, the EGMP stuff like the EV6 and the Ioniq 5. But it's adequate, you know, and it's a relatively small battery, so it doesn't really take that long to charge. I like the previous Niro. I like this one. I like the size of it. It's slightly bigger, slightly longer than the Kona, the first generation Kona, which means the back seat is a little more usable. The back seat in the first gen Kona is pretty tight. This one, you know, is definitely much more usable. The Wave comes with a bunch of features like a power sunroof. It does have vehicle to load onboard power generator, like the EGMP stuff. It has a heads up display, the memory driver's seat and, you know, vented, you know, cooled front seats, which didn't really need last week in California, since it was kind of cool chilly to begin with.
Yeah.
It also had the latest highway driving assist too, which is their Kia, Hyundai and Kia's hands-on lane centering system. And interestingly, you know, driving it back from Healdsburg back to San Francisco through some fairly heavy rain, there were a couple times when the system actually, even though, you know, my hands were on the wheel, system deactivated. One time, you know, there was one time when I hit a puddle, and I think it at least on the left front wheel, I think it hydroplaned briefly, which caused it to kick out of the highway driving assist and actually disable it temporarily. And also when the wipers were going, you know, really fast, it also turned off the system. But otherwise, you know, this thing is generally pretty pleasant to drive. One thing I noticed with this one, though, is, you know, when using the adaptive cruise control or the highway drive assist, it seemed to it was not as smooth in braking and doing a speed control as I've remembered in the past with the system. It was a little more jerky, so it seems like it would wait a little bit longer and then kind of get on the brakes harder. So it was not feeling as seamless as I recall in the past. And in fact, in some cases, I had to just turn the system off because I was, you know, getting closer and closer to the vehicle in front, even with the gap set long, and it did not seem to be slowing down. And so, you know, I'm not sure if it was the radar or the camera that was getting obscured by the heavy, you know, by the rain, but it was definitely not being as responsive as it normally would be. Hmm. So it wasn't what I expected in that respect. The one I drove also had the Wave Reserve package, which has heat pump, heating system, heating and cooling system, which is more efficient than a traditional resistive heater. And it also has heated rear upward seats. You get that for $1,300 as an option. Overall, you know, I generally like the Niro. Like I said, I like the size of it. You know, it drives pretty well. You know, it's comfortable. But you know, this one was pretty pricey. All in, $47,790. Wow. And
why would you buy that over the EV6 at that point?
When you're exactly. That much? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you might as well go with the EV6. You know, it's 253 mile range. You know, base EV6, that, you know, they dropped the standard range EV6 this year. And the base EV6 is like, I think, and rear wheel drive is a little over, is like 320 mile range, and it's about the same price. And you know, this, if you went for, you know, the lower trim level of the Niro EV, you can get that for about 41. But the problem is now, you know, with the IRA, these are assembled in South Korea. They're not built in North America, so they're no longer eligible for tax credits. Mm-hmm. Which means that almost $48,000 price is what you're going to pay. And, you know, I think that is too much for this car. Much as I like this car, a lot about this car, it's too much. You know, even $40,000 is pushing it for, you know, for this car. I think, you know, it should be priced, you know, closer to low 30s at best. You know, the one I had was white with the gray C-pillar trim. Which some people don't like that look, the contrasting blade there on the C pillars. I'm fine with it. But guesses on the destination charge?
$995. $1,200.
Robbie finally gets one. $1,295.
finally, I'm a winner. Yeah, the Kona is like starts at $33,000 because and they dropped the price a year and a half ago on the Kona.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, okay, well, this is just a really, cause you know, I own the Kona and the Niro is nicer.
Yeah.
But is it like $8,000 nicer?
Or
$7,000
like,
nicer?
More like $15,000 nicer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the starting price. That's the starting price. So, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at this price point, I would have a really hard time recommending this one.
You gotta get it on the lease where you can still get the $7,500. That's the trick.
Yep.
You get the lease and then somehow, I don't know.
So, you know, driving this thing around, you know, I drove it, you know, into San Francisco and then drove over to the East Bay for a couple of meetings. In San Francisco, I managed to get it to chart. I was at a Whole Foods on Market Street where they have a couple of EVgo chargers in the garage, which is underneath the store. And after trying to use my corporate credit card to charge, and it wouldn't accept that. And it turns out there was some nonsense with EVgo not being an approved merchant, for the corporate card. So it was getting declined.
My God.
So I finally got it to work after a couple of
attempts.
Wait a minute.
So this was a case of your company's security to make sure you weren't just like, you know, getting hookers and blow or something would not let you use the EV charger for your
car. Exactly. I don't know. EVgo sounds like hookers and blow. If you really think about the name.
Uh-huh, that could be sketchy. That's
EV. I thought it was EasyGo. Okay, never mind.
Whole different thing.
After I got home, I called up the department that handles the corporate credit card program and got them to fix that. So hopefully that'll work in the future.
Oh my gosh.
You know, and even when I tried using my own card, it still wouldn't work properly at first. I had to try it a couple times before it would finally go through. Then when I was over on the East Bay, I tried using another, after driving for a while, I tried using another EVgo charger. That one didn't work at all. I tried a ChargePoint charger near the Facebook headquarters park in the Facebook headquarters parking lot. That one didn't work at all.
Did they all just not work? Do they give you weird messages
nothing? I plug it in, nothing happens. And then when I got back, before I went to the airport, before I dropped off the car, I found another EVgo in San Bruno. Yeah, San Bruno. And that one worked. Actually, the first two chargers I plugged it into did not work at all. The connector was so hosed, it wouldn't even go in and click. And then the other one, it wouldn't communicate. I don't know what was going on, but just nothing worked. Finally, the third charger I tried at that location, would actually charge it. So it was quite annoying.
What's going on with EVgo? They are redoing a charging station near my house. And they had three chargers there, and you go there and you charge, and it's fine. And they're like, oh, we're putting in new ones. And they seems like they got to a point, and then just nothing. I drive by it all the time, and I look, and I'm like, they haven't done anything in like 2 months.
Are the chargers there or just
nothing? They're there. They're just there. They're just they got to a point where they were working on it, and then the chargers were there, and then they just stopped. And I mean, I guess you could say the rain, but I don't feel
it's more likely some sort of permitting issue or some issue with the utility trying to get it hooked up and provisioned and everything.
Maybe.
Especially if it's a higher power charger than what they had before.
Yeah, I think they're putting in a higher power charger. So.
Yeah.
Hey, it's next to a shopping place that I go to, so I always like those because I'm like, ooh, and just boom, throw a couple dollars in there.
Top it off a little bit.
Top it off. Get a little something in there.
A little something.
All right. Let's move on, but let's stick with a Kia EV for now. New York Auto Show is coming up in a couple of weeks. And one of the highlights of the show is going to be the launch of the Kia EV9,
mm-hmm.
Which, Nicole, you have seen in person.
I did. When they flew me out to Korea earlier this year, it was to get a first look at the actual non-concept versions, basically, of the EV9. They had a couple of them there for us to look at. They had them, the designers there, to talk to us about all of the different design decisions that were made about it. It was great to get a first look at it. So I got hands-on time with the new EV9.
Did they drive you around in it or just like show it?
Nope. There was no driving around it. We were allowed to get in it, but we weren't allowed to drive around in it. They were just static in the warehouse that they had taken us to. So no driving around in it, unfortunately.
Did you get to sit in the second row seats facing backwards?
I didn't. I didn't play with the second row seats backwards. I sat in the third row. I sat up front and got to play around with the infotainment and to see the three screens that they have, because there's like a large instrument cluster. Then there's a large traditional infotainment screen, and there's a little tiny screen like wedged in the middle that just controls, I believe it just controls the HVAC. So you've got like this very long expanse of screens across the dashboard, but they are very, like, the clarity is really good and the responsiveness is really good. That can, you know, you touch them and you get exactly what you want the first try around. So I liked how the screens looked. I liked the layout. It has that same, you know, it has in the vein of the EV6, it has that very open, very airy feeling. You know, it just, there's a lot of space. And I did like that it's a very clean interior. Like, it's supposed to sort of highlight where they're going with design, not where they've been with design. So as much as EV6 is a little bit different than a lot of what the other vehicles that you see from Kia, EV9 then goes one step further in terms of their design language, both inside and out. What I really liked, and you kind of have to look like at a straight on, like look right at the grill of this car, smack at the grill. And you notice it is, despite this being huge, it's big. They really sculpted it very straight along the sides. There's none of these like big slender fender flares and big haunches. They kind of gave it a sort of straight look from the front, so it makes it feel a little less gigantic. But then when you look at it in profile, you see all this sort of, there is some sort of geometric sort of sculpturing to the sheet metal, so it gives it a little bit of character. And I also really like, they have these really funky lights, the front LED lights. It's sort of like a blade light that kind of goes along the front. And they say it's supposed to look like a constellation. So if you were looking up at Cassiopeia or whatever, and you connected the dots, that's supposed to be the idea of what it kind of mimics in that design. So I wanted them to have a name. I'm like, did you name it? They're like, no, it's the star map constellation. I'm like, a name, gentlemen, give it a name. Nope, there was no name. Yeah. So they had no name for it, which is disappointing, but they had, it looks really, really cool in the front. And they even sort of slightly different, but the same idea in the back. And they say that's like one of those design cues that you're going to see that flowing through to the rest of the Kia lineup going forward. I keep thinking of things like, you know, you have the Thor's hammer headlights on the Volvo that I just love how those look. And it's very distinctive. I think they're sort of going for their own, the completely different look, but the same idea. It's going to be a distinctive lighting signature that when you see this, you're going to know that's a Kia. You're going to know without having to look at the badge or know exactly which car that you're looking at. So it was really, for us, it was really a study in the design of what they've done with this. I mean, they couldn't even tell us what the range on the battery was. So they were still very tight-lipped on a lot of details. They wouldn't confirm the screen size. There's a lot that they wouldn't say. So it was more a look at what they're doing. And it was interesting to see where they think the brand is going. It does give it this very clean, very futuristic look without being like out there. You know how sometimes it's almost like they feel like to make this feel like a vehicle of the future, we're going to make it a little weird. No, it's not a little weird. It doesn't have to be weird just to be of the future. So I it really looked good. The quality was good. The seating was super comfy. So I like it, and I cannot wait to drive this. I'm really curious to see how it drives and how it handles. They're really betting heavy on this one. Like, it's not just, yeah, okay, fine, we'll do an electrical, we'll make it a through. Like, no, we're really going to make this something. So they're truly making this huge effort to make this a big deal, I guess.
They're electric Telluride.
It's like their electric Telluride. Yeah. Like the Telluride was a big deal for the gas. This is a big deal for Kia. And they didn't, I don't feel like corners were cut. Like, they kind of went all in with design. I feel like once we get all the numbers, I feel like the numbers are going to live up to that too. I can't imagine they would have spent all of this time with all these creative and interesting and unique design elements and then like, let's phone it in when it comes to battery. It's, you know, like, yeah, whatever.
12 miles.
Wait, suck it up, people. That's all you get.
I was looking at a couple of other reports, you know, indicating that they're expecting it to have, at least with the extended range battery, at least 300 miles of range.
That's what we're expecting, but there's no, US. Like, if you look, there wasn't, it's like, we think it'll have that. What will it have? Could have 12. Robbie might be right. I think the 300 is probably a better bet, but it could be 12. So Robbie, finally, you're right.
Finally, right at something.
If this comes back at 12, we're going to hear Robbie screaming like, yes, from all the way across.
I'm not going to be, because that means I have to drive a car with 12 miles.
I know, right?
Drive around the block. Yeah. I'm like, well, that's the review.
So it is really, I mean, I really liked it. And I think it's unique. I think people are going to really like this. And if the pricing state, you know, Kia tends to do that. We give you a lot of content for a very good price. If they can nail that as well. What I think is neat about this is going to give families who want to go with an electric, but were like, I cannot afford to get into a three. I can't afford to go into something big. I can't afford something like, there's not options out there that are family three row EVs. This could be that. It could be like the car.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, right now
asking me for that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, right now, if you need a three row SUV, you know, if you've got, you know, three kids or more and you need that third row, but, and you want to go electric, basically the only options you have are really at the high end of the market, you know, like the, you know, like the Model X or, you know, the Rivian R1S or the, you know, Mercedes EQS, SUV.
Right.
And, you know, those are really out of reach for a lot of consumers.
Yeah.
So, you know, if Kia can get this thing out there, you know, if they can deliver, you know, a 300 mile range, you know, for somewhere in the, you know, say $60,000 price range. Yeah. I mean, that's still far from cheap,
but that's a big deal.
It gets you a lot closer and a lot more people are going to be able to afford this.
Yeah. I think that's part of their moving the brand forward thing. It's like, we're going to continue to make affordable vehicles that are a great value for the features and what they have. But we're going to make it so that real people can afford it, that you don't have to be a higher income that you don't have to stretch your budget to the point that, you know, okay, everything I'm saving by, you know, the benefits of having an EV financially now, I just kicked them all out the window because I had to spend an extra 20 grand to get this thing in the first place. I think this could be it really could be a game changer for Kia if they're able to do this. And then I hope, and they have said nothing about this, so this isn't like something they've said, but, you know, with production being still weird for everybody, nobody is quite delivering everything when production isn't quite what it's supposed to be. I'm really hopeful that the timing has all come together, because it would be like nothing worse than doing all this and it's like, oh wait,
we can't build them.
I'm hoping they can build enough to satisfy. Yeah, like come on, Kia, make this happen. So I really liked it. And I think that, you know, for so many reasons, this could be a really, really big vehicle for them.
It looks really cool. It looks like it's in motion when it's just sitting there, because it has those nice little it's futuristic, but like tasteful and not like over the top. And
did you check out the wheels? I like note the crazy wheels.
I do like
wheels.
The little wheels. I do.
They
like
had, they have two, there were two different, I think they show them both in the pictures. There were two different versions of the wheels that they showed us. And we also like, so are those like some weird little, you're showing us these wheels, but no, again, like, oh no, we're going to have those wheels. And they're really funky. I like them. And they're very low profile still, you know, not all the bumps and, you know, the fancy 25 different, you know, spindles and stuff to make them. They're still nice and efficient in terms of their design. They're not a Wrangler of wheels. They're the Wrangler of wheels. They're nice and aerodynamic. So, but they look great. They look really cool, and it adds some neat personality, you know?
And you know, this whole swiveling second row seat thing, I think, is going to be really interesting for families, you know, being able to spin those second row seats around and face the third row, you know, will be an interesting option, you know, for kids, you know, playing games or whatever, or just, you know, doing things on a road trip, keep them occupied.
Right. Yeah, I know that really changes it. And that's different. You know, like I said, they did some really different, unique things with this. And I like that. I think the idea of that is cool. I'm curious how it would work out. Like, you've got three kids in the car and you can spin them around. Are people going to fight for that second row even harder now? Kids, right? I want the spinny seat. I want to be able to spin around.
Absolutely, they will.
That's going to make it like, is that going to make it better than shotgun? I guess when you're old enough to ride shotgun, you're like, no, I still want the second row because I want the spinny seat.
at least when you have that seat turned around, you won't have to worry about the kid behind you kicking you in the back.
That's true. They can just kick each other.
Yeah.
They can just kick each other. All you can Finally. Have four kids back
Ooh,
there.
Maybe
just,
that's not so good though.
Oh my gosh, you would.
They're gonna,
like,
be,
oh,
they're gonna
so
be
would.
Screaming.
Oh, you're gonna be kicking your brother or sister. Like, you're gonna, oh my gosh, and think about that.
Ooh, yeah. Okay.
It's gonna be bruised. Okay, let's move on.
All right. So staying electric. Actually, we're pretty much all electric today. The reason that we were all in California, well, I mean, you're always in California, Robbie, or most of the time. But the reason that we went to California this week was to drive the Nissan Ariya e-Force.
Mm-hmm.
We each had our opportunities to drive it.
It's like, it's not E-4. It's like E and the number four and then O-R-C.
E-Force.
Force.
Yeah. Force.
Is it? Is it actually?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't even notice that.
It's the E. There's no F. Or, it's just
it's the
E4 Ors. E4 Ors.
Okay.
He's like, that can't be. They're wrong. No, we're right. We're right, Sam.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Okay.
E4 Ors.
So, the Ariya went on sale in the U.S. in December. I think they've delivered a couple of thousand of them so far, but those were all single motor front wheel drive variants. Yes. This is the dual motor all wheel drive variant, which comes with two different battery sizes, a 63 kilowatt hour and an 87. We only drove the latter. If you get the smaller battery, you get 335 horsepower and 413 foot pounds of torque. If you get the big one, you get 389 and 442 foot-pounds of torque. What did you think?
I liked it. I think that, and you know, what I liked is they took us to a track to show us how their torque vectoring works. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone has torque vector. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, torque vector. Like, yeah, we got it. But the test that they have us doing where, you know, you start with the wheel at an angle and then you go through a turn while slamming down on the accelerator, and the vehicle not pushing, not giving you understeer. Mm-hmm. I like, oh, this is good. This is, I think they've done a good thing with this, because I don't care about, you know, for these vehicles, 0 to 60 numbers. I mean, we talk about them, but
they don't matter.
They don't matter. What really matters is when you're driving around.
It's just under 5 seconds. Yeah. Which is fine.
But what really matters is that this vehicle, when you're driving around town and it's raining, yeah. they were wetting the track until we got there. And they're like, yeah, we don't have to do that. You know, if it keeps you on the road, better than say another vehicle, that's a big deal. Especially, you know, you got your family, you got your kid, maybe you got your friend, maybe you got your dogs, things that you love in the car with you. And if the car can keep you from sort of like, you know, that terror of understeer, because oversteer, you're like, oh, I'm sliding. Oh, okay. I kind of had, but understeer, like, you're like, oh God, I'm turning the wheel, but I'm just going, now you're just a passenger.
Yeah. It's somehow more panic inducing. You're like, oh,
it is. Cause you're like, oh no, because to get out of understeer, you have to actually stop steering. You have to like straighten out a little bit so it catches and then finish your turn.
And it's all back like off the accelerator. And
yeah, you have to everything like
get some weight transfer onto the front axle.
It's all absolutely everything you don't want to do when you're panicking because your car is not going the way you want it to go. Exactly. All the things your brain is like, that shouldn't work. It's like, no, brain, listen to me. Listen to me. If I do these things, this will work.
Yeah.
So I like that. I think, you know, it drives nice. It's, you know, the interior is really nice. Mm-hmm. For you know, I think they really, you know, knocked it out of the park with the interior. That wood just feels really nice. The haptic feedback is good. You know, it's not great, but it's good enough. People are going to be like, look at this.
Mm-hmm.
Something good. And you have actual physical button-esques for like climate control. And so, the most confusing thing was the lack of one pedal driving though. I can't wrap my head around their reasoning for that. They're like, well, people just don't like it. It's too aggressive. And we're like, well, you could still give them the option.
Yeah.
Because
they
that's
don't
one
have
of the things.
To use it.
Like, people were driving. That's what settings are for.
Right.
That's
right.
What the, like, one of the things that people loved about the Leaf is like, have you tried this thing where you can one pedal driving? And then Nissan's like, yeah, the thing that everyone liked and then everyone copied. Yeah, we're getting rid of that for the
option. We don't want to do that. We changed our mind. Bye bye.
What?
Yeah, it's a strange decision. I'm sure there's a reason that comes down to marketing and blah, 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 blah. But it was kind of a weird decision. I would agree.
Yeah. And then the fact that the center console moves backwards and forwards, I
like that.
But why?
Because I think it's because okay.
It looks cool.
Because
I was looking, I'm like, oh, there must be some extra space underneath.
But okay, so because
it just moves back. And I'm like,
wait. I like that. That's one of the things I like. So it has the center console, of course, it has your like cup holders and I think there's a spot for your cell phone or whatever, but the padding for the armrest is also on there. So if you're depending on where you have your seat adjusted and your height, if it's in the wrong spot, if you have to pull your seat too far forward, the armrest is behind you. If you're a tall guy, so you probably like if it's too, that doesn't happen. Right. You know what I mean?
I'll give it up for that. But
right, so if you're short and you move forward and you're like, it's weird. It's at a weird angle. I've had armrests where it's like 2/3 of the way back on my arm. It's like an elbow rest. I'm like, that's not what I want. I want it to be for my arm. Scooch that forward. Now. It's perfectly aligned for me. And then when you get in Robbie, you can move it all the way back for your giant size.
I was moving it back. I'm like, oh, there must be some, and I've driven the car before.
Yeah.
Somewhere. I don't remember. And I was too busy driving the car to like really like play with the arm with the center console. And then I was playing with it and I was moving it back and I'm like, oh, there's gotta be like some extra space under here. Like it's hidden space and you get to it. Huh? I'm like, no,
it's just to make it perfectly. So no matter where you position all the right front seat, you can make the armrest perfect for you. I like it. That was one of the things I liked.
Oh,
I like the drawer.
I like the little drawer. No, I like the little drawer. I like the little hidden drawer.
Perfect spot for a cookie.
Yeah, you put your cookie in there. You can put your weed in it. Like all the things you want to hide.
So there's these two little buttons on the console. And you push them. And instead of having like under the center, there's still a glove box. But right under the center, it comes out. There's a lid and it holds stuff in it and then you boop and it goes back. But the little lid serves as a table too. So if you were sitting, you could put like your drink or whatever. If you're sitting, whatever, it's like a little table, it's a little automatic deployable table and like drawer and hidey place for my cookies.
what else? Oh, you know what? The ProPilot 2, when it when you kind of trick it into, because it was raining, and yes, they told us if the windshield wipers are medium or above medium.
Yeah, great, more than intermediate.
Intermediate, then it turns off. It doesn't give you the hands-free mm-hmm. portion of it. But when it was working, it worked. I place it in between better than Blue Cruise, but under Super Cruise. It's not as like ping pong is Blue Cruise, but it's not quite as smooth as Super Cruise.
I think so that's good probably
job.
Fair.
Good job, Bundy, on that.
Yeah,
It's because Super Cruise is still like my favorite. I loved Super Cruise.
Smooth.
And the thing I else. One of the things I really liked about their implementation of ProPilot 2. So this is their hands-free system. You know, when we talked to Kelly Funkhauser, you know, one of the things that they talked about from their testing of driver assist systems, and the reason why they rated Blue Cruise above Super Cruise is because, you know, it doesn't go just from ACC to hands off. But you know, it kind of goes in stages. So you have hands on lane centering and then hands free lane centering. And this does the same thing. So when you press the ProPilot button on the steering wheel spoke, at first it comes on in just ACC mode. And then depending on the conditions, it'll judge, you know, okay, can I do lane centering? Are there lane markings? Great. Then it goes to the lane centering mode with hands on. And then if it determines that it's on a highway and it uses maps, actually uses the same map database that GM uses for Super Cruise, it's from a company called Usher. And then, you know, if you're on a highway, it will allow you to go hands-free. But what the thing that Nissan really did so much better than Ford is the HMI, the human machine interface. Mm-hmm. So if you have ProPilot 2.0, the heads-up display is standard equipment on all the models that have ProPilot 2.0. And so you have the digital instrument cluster, and then the heads-up display, and they actually completely changed the color scheme based on the mode for both the cluster and the HUD, so that when you're in that base lane centering or base ACC mode, it's a predominantly white color scheme. When it goes to hands-on, which is basically the same as ProPilot 1, then it goes green, both in the cluster and in the HUD, and then when it goes to hands-free mode, it goes to blue. There's no mode confusion. It's right in front of you there. You know from the color which mode you're in. And it's much easier to tell what the current state of the system is than it is with Blue Cruise. And I think they did that really well. And it transitions smoothly back and forth, you know, depending on the conditions. So, you know, as we were driving down 101, you know, when there was little or no rain or light rain and it was allowing you to go hands-free, you know, go to blue, go hands-free, just sit back, you know, keep an eye on the road, still got the infrared driver monitor camera looking at you to, you know, to alert you if you're not paying attention. And then as the rain got heavier, then it would go back to hands-on mode. It would go from blue to green. Very easy to tell what mode you're in. And then finally, you know, in certain conditions, it would be just ACC only. So I thought all of that worked really well, was really well implemented on this vehicle.
Yeah, I still kind of wish they put a little bit something on the steering wheel, but the fact that it's on the HUD and the HUD is standard,
yeah,
is like that's the best. They told us that the light bar would do it, but then the light bar didn't come on. I don't know what's going
well,
on.
Well, yeah, so I think it has to be
nighttime.
Yeah, you don't really see it. There's an ambient light bar across the dash that matches those colors, and in the daytime you don't really see it. At night, apparently, you can see it.
Yeah, so. I was doing this where I cut my hand over it and turned the lights on. I'm like, oh, forget it. Because I'm parked at that point. I'm like, well, this isn't a real test.
Yeah.
So, and then if you turn the lights on, now the lights dim. It's still, yeah. Anyway, I think Nissan is good for them. You know, they've been digging themselves out of a hole for the past year or so. And I think this is, you know, for a company that had the number one selling EV in the world for a while, to just sort of like not do anything, I think this is a good return to them, to the EV world.
Yeah. I mean, they were kind of first with, you know, first to market with a mainstream modern EV with the original Leaf in late 2010. And then they did nothing until late 2020 for 11 years or 12 years, you know, when they finally launched the Aria. And you know, unlike the Leaf, this one has a CCS charge port for DC fast charging instead of CHAdeMO. So now Nissan is going with, you know, whatever is the local standard. So in Japan, if you buy an Ariya, you get CHAdeMO. Here you get CCS type 1, which is what we use here. And then in Europe, you get CCS type 2, which is a slightly different version for their three-phase power. The charging is not as fast as, say, EGMP, because it's the 400-volt system. So it's only 130 kilowatt. And you know, they quote for quick charge from 10 to 80%, it'll take 40 minutes, which is more than twice as long as what is theoretically possible with the Hyundais and Kias.
That's the big drawback.
Yeah,
I mean, but you know what, I like the interior. This is really beautiful, the versatility of it, and I really liked how the all-wheel drive drove. I felt like it was much more fun to drive than the front wheel drive version.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
like such, I wish they'd launched this first. Like, because I feel like if you drove the front wheel drive, you kind of went like, oh, okay.
All right. This is a good return for them. And then you drive this, you're like, oh, this is much better. Like,
this one's better. This one I like.
Someone deserves a raise.
Someone deserves a raise. For the front wheel drive, just don't fire him. For the all-wheel drive, give them a raise.
Everyone gets their regular bonus, but the front with the all-wheel drive,
get a little extra.
They get a little extra and a party, a pizza party.
A pizza party.
Maybe at a bowling alley.
Pizza and cookies. Yeah, pie.
Chuck E. Cheese. Mm-hmm. At a Chuck E. Cheese. But they bring in other pizza.
And unlike the Kia, because this is currently only built in Japan, no clean vehicle credits for this unless you do a lease. I've talked to Nissan a couple of times about this now, and they are looking at their future production plans, you know, as to where they're going to build stuff. And I think that if this thing does reasonably well, I think that there's a pretty strong likelihood that they will add production of this vehicle in Tennessee, not before 2025, probably in 25 when they'll start building it here. But they are going to start building more EVs in North America. And I would guess that this will probably be one of the first, because this is, you know, this is in a market segment that, you know, is pretty popular. You know, this thing is, you know, same size, roughly the same size as, you know, an Ioniq 5, Mach-E, you know, and a bunch of other vehicles. So I think that, you know, there's a good potential for this thing to be built here and then get clean vehicle credits. Although they will have to resource the battery, because right now the batteries for these things come from CATL in China. And so they won't be able to get any credits for that. So they'll have to get batteries from a different supplier.
Nissan just doesn't have the capital that everyone else has to like Hyundai's like, oh, you know what? We're just going to move up building cars in the U.S. now.
Yeah.
Because we're doing pretty well. I think Nissan's like still like, okay, we gotta sell cars to build cars. We gotta sell more. So, you know, but this is a really good car. If you're looking for an EV, give it a look.
Yeah, I agree.
And the stitching on the leather seats was also really nice. It just looked good and felt good.
It does have a really good looking interior. I think especially for Nissan.
So nice.
I think
the little Japanese inspired, like.
Oh, I don't know. They had a name for that.
They did have a name. Oh. And at one point they called it like Zen. And I'm like, I'm not putting Zen in an article about a Japanese car because I'm a white guy writing about Zen. Well, I put Samurai in there too. Some
what
other,
did they call like, it? Because it was such a neat little, they had a name for it and I can't remember. It sounded cool. And none of us can remember it, but it sounded cool and it also looks cool. So there you go. Whatever it's called,
it still
sounds and looks cool. Yeah.
All righty. Let's see. Where's the list here? Oh, okay. So when I did get to San Francisco on Tuesday, my first stop was to meet up with a couple of people from Waymo to go for a ride in one of their Jaguar I-Paces, which I haven't done in San Francisco previously. There's about 100 and some of these driving around San Francisco, has been for quite a while now. And this was there were three of us in the vehicle. Nobody was sitting behind the steering wheel. It was we just you know, we got in. They said, "Okay, where do you want to go?" And I said, "Well, let's start with the Fillmore." And so we headed off towards the Fillmore. And while we were on our way there, I said, "Let's make a stop at City Hall." So put that in the app, and it rerouted, went to City Hall, and then went on to the Fillmore. It was all, you know, this was like, you know, 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning, so fair amount of traffic in San Francisco, a little bit of light rain. It just all worked really well. I did notice in a couple of spots that it did seem to decide, instead of doing a left turn here, I'm going to make three right turns, which is fine.
Because it's safer to do the
to do the left. It's a San Francisco thing. Some places you just can't turn left, so you just learn how to do three rights anyway.
Yeah. Well, and it's safer. And in a city where there's a lot of traffic, a lot of times it can actually be faster.
Right.
Rather than waiting at an intersection, through three or four light cycles to make a left turn. It all worked really well. There were no issues with it. I know one thing that, was different from the way Cruise is doing it, on the Cruise robo-taxis, on their Bolts, they're not, on the screen, in the back seat for the passengers. They show you where you are on the map, but it's not showing you any detail about, what the sensors are seeing, which is something that Waymo has been doing from the beginning. It shows you the other cars around you, and, other companies do this too. Tesla does it with their autopilot and FSD, and even the Niro I was driving showed you the other cars that the cameras were seeing. So, I like that. One interesting detail during the ride, since about 2015 or 16, Waymo has had microphones on the outside of their car to listen for emergency vehicles. So when they hear sirens, then the sensors look to see where it's coming from, and then it'll pull over if necessary. And it actually did that. We were near City Hall, and a fire truck was going by, sirens blaring, and it pulled over and waited until the fire truck passed. And then continued on its way. So, that was a good thing. Overall, it was just a pretty uneventful ride. Right now, Waymo doesn't yet have a permit for carrying paying passengers in California. They're hoping to get that soon. They do have permits for carrying non-paying passengers as part of their early rider program. And they also carry employees. They're making good progress. This is something that is slowly becoming a real thing.
That's really cool. That's good. I'm glad to hear that it was a positive experience.
Yeah. All right. Last item before we hit a couple of listener questions. The VW ID2 All concept. Why they're calling it that, I really ID2 don't know.
All?
It
just
looks like
that?
It's ready to go. It's just ready to go. I don't know why they're saying concept. Like, what is concept-y about it? They have, like, reflectors
what
on it.
What is concept-y? Like, concept-iness defined, please.
You look in the interior, it has, like, all the little buttons it's supposed to have. What is concept-y about this
vehicle? What is concept-y?
Well, because the production version is not coming till 2025.
I guess.
So it's going to change between now and then.
Yeah. Probably not much.
I don't think they're going to change much of anything.
A little tiny bit. Just a little bit.
We'll probably have to put, like, a different, like, reflector.
It's like a skosh. A scotia change.
It's going to come out as a pickup. Yeah.
That's going to be a full-size three-row SUV.
We made a few changes, guys. Whoa.
This is actually going to be the Scout when it arrives. So they claim that it is has as much interior room as a VW Golf, which is nice. That's more than adequate for most people.
Mm-hmm.
And the really important thing about this is the price is supposed to be less than 25,000 euros. So about $25,000.
And okay, so there's 280 miles of range with a WLTP cycle, which means about 230, I guess, with EPA. 230 for 20, that's.
Yeah.
Bring it over here so people can buy it.
Yeah. Right? Give us one, please.
Give us the two.
Bring it to
all,
us. Try
ID
it.
ID2 All.
ID2 All. What is it again? I already forgot the
ID2 All.
ID2 All.
Yeah, just call it the ID2.
Tual. What does that mean? Are we saying it right? Is it like the weird things like where force is like four ors, but it's force? What else could Tual?
Tual.
ID Tual? Tual. No, is it a name or are they saying Tual?
It's Tual. It's for everyone.
Tual.
People.
Oh,
all people.
Everybody can afford one.
All right. Everybody can afford one. Okay.
For all.
So this has a new iteration of the MEB platform. It will be the first with front-wheel drive. So right now, if you get a two-wheel drive ID3 or ID4 or Skoda or any of the other variants that they sell in Europe, the two-wheel drive versions are all rear motor, rear-wheel drive. This one will have it in the front, have the motor in the front. And presumably, they will stack all the electronics and everything in there in the front, which will provide, probably for a little bit more rear seat room, without having the motor back there. 166 kilowatt, 224 roughly horsepower electric motor, which you're talking almost GTI power levels there.
Yeah.
Like you said, 230, 240 miles of range for 20, under 25 grand. Can't complain about that.
Yeah, that's a deal.
Are they just going to like tease us? Are they waiting for people to say yes? I have the story about how the ID3 didn't show up here, right? I've said it on here where they gave Volkswagen Germany told Volkswagen America they could have the ID3. All they had to do was sell 20,000 units, and Volkswagen America's like, no. We want to make a big splash with the ID4 because that's the crossover segment. It's a big semi. So they didn't want to sort of just like, oh, here's the thing, and then here's our big crossover. They really wanted to make the crossover the sort of the centerpiece, and so now that's why we don't have an ID3. But I mean, the ID2 all. I mean, other than like if they made it a Cabrio.
Robbie loses his mind.
That could be fun,
right?
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Throw an extra $5,000 on there, cut the top off. But this is a perfect car for just cruising around town, taking care of everything. It's got lots of room. It has like, because there's nothing.
You could fit
in the
a couple
back,
of dogs in the back seat.
You could put your dogs in the back. There's like a big like hole, like a big like cubby area in the back. Apparently you can put a carry-on in there sideways.
That's
on
cool.
Its side, and then some milk crates full of some sort of.
I know. It's like, German, what's with the milk crates?
We're German.
If you have a band, you're probably going to have milk crates, right?
Yeah, but that's these true. Are like full of water. Are they anticipating
you know what they're full
apocalypse?
Of? I bet it's German. They're full of apple juice.
You've got Germans, it. You're right.
Germans love apple juice. It's got the room people need. You could just cruise it around. You could put your dogs in it. I don't know. They're not going to say they're going to bring it here.
Do you think they will?
I don't know.
Probably not. Unfortunately, we probably won't get it.
Volkswagen's going to, they need to see somebody else do this, is essentially what Volkswagen. And Mini's doing it with the SE, but I mean, the numbers, and they just can't make enough.
But the SE is a lot more expensive than this, though.
Yeah, it's more expensive. It has less range.
Yeah.
It's a hoot to drive, but it doesn't have the big numbers that Volkswagen is going to look at and say, okay, there's a market for this.
I'll bet you, with this range, this 450 kilometer range, 230, 40 mile range, this is probably using at this price point, it's probably using a lithium iron phosphate battery rather than a nickel rich battery, which that would help them get the price down. Maybe they could. Maybe they would bring this thing over.
Maybe. If they could get fleet. Well, see, the problem is you can't get like local, like government fleets to buy it because it's not American.
Right.
But if they could get other fleets to buy it, like little, like the housekeepers, they all have like.
I wonder if the Made in America rules for the government fleets allow. I can't remember if it has to be in the U.S. or if it's anywhere in North America.
I don't know.
Because they, if they built this thing in Mexico, where they've been building Jettas and Golfs, the wagons for a long time.
The wagons.
That could keep the cost down and help them hit that price point. But
it could.
We'll see.
I mean, the concept that the concept they showed at the Munich show. Was that Munich? I don't know. Somewhere in Germany. It was a little bit more. It was sort of outlandish and sort of. It was really cool, but I like the guy who designed it got fired.
Oh gosh.
The Germans are like
a little bit too cool.
Yeah, it was a little too cool. I think this is more in line with what people would actually buy. The other one was a bit more niche. I mean, I'd be like, oh yeah, I'll totally buy this, but they're never going to bring it. This, on the other hand, I mean, I can see a bunch of people buying it. I get people asking me all the time. I just want a hatchback that I can drive around. And I'm like, well, there's the Golf and there's the Golf.
Yeah.
Oh, have you heard of the Golf?
There's also a Golf, Rob.
Well, there's also the Mazda 3.
And the Mazda 3.
Yeah. And a Toyota Corolla. You can get a Toyota Corolla hatchback.
Oh, yeah. The Toyota
Corolla. But I would take this thing over any of those.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I just plug it and drive it around, put the dogs in the back. I can do band things in it. I can go to the store. Man, I'm just sad now. I'm gonna stop looking at it because it's just, every time I look at it, I just like, man, they're not gonna bring this to you.
Gets cranky.
I do. I just get cranky. I get cranky like when they took the wagon away. I was like, oh. Every time. I mean, even Volvo. Like we tried. We brought you wagons, and no one bought them.
You know, I would. You know, if it wasn't for Dieselgate, I would probably still be driving a VW wagon.
Mm.
Yes,
we would probably still have one in the garage. You know, we had to sell it back. So.
Womp, womp.
Womp, womp.
All right. Let's answer a couple of questions. All right. First up from Amp300. And this actually came from the Twit Discord, not from our own Discord, but from the Twit Discord.
Ooh. Oh, that's funny.
It says, we're in the market to buy a new family hauler by the end of the year, which is my non-committal way of saying probably a minivan.
Minivans are awesome. All right.
We were initially looking into a Pacifica hybrid, plug-in hybrid, as most of our daily driving would be less than the 32-mile electric range. We have solar panels at home and an EV charger available at work. And I've seen reviews indicating the Pacifica basically turns into a regular 30-mile-per-gallon hybrid anytime the temperature drops below freezing, because there is no EV-only switch, and it is designed to use heat from the ICE to keep the battery at normal operating temperatures. That, combined with the latest recall in January and Chrysler's less than stellar reputation for build quality and long-term reliability, are making me wonder if I should cross it off the list in favor of the non-PHEV Toyota hybrid. That would be the Sienna. Does anyone here have a Pacifica hybrid? Would you buy it again, given the recalls and limitations? So let me answer a couple of things first. I'm not sure that it, first of all, you're right. There is no EV only switch. Cause I think, and, you know, if you consider the fact that Chrysler has never really referred to this as a plug-in hybrid, they always refer to it as just the Pacifica hybrid. Because I think what they're trying to do when they launched this thing was trying to make it as simple as possible for people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not trying to, this is a vehicle that was not targeted at, you know, the enthusiasts like some of the people, you know, that would drive like a Prius Prime or something like that. You know, they just wanted to make it as simple and as efficient as for drivers as possible. So you come home at night, you plug it in, unplug it in the morning, you do go about your way and don't even think about what mode it's in. Just let it find its most efficient place. I have not had one in cold temperatures, so I don't know if it goes into, if it'll go into electric mode. My guess is, If you use the preconditioning, which it does have for the climate control. So, you know, if you have it, if you tell it, you know, I need to leave at 7 in the morning and I want the temperature, you know, 68 degrees or 70 degrees, and it's all, the cabin's already warmed up, then it probably will go in electric mode. If you need to use the heat, then it's going to turn on the engine, at least for a while, until it generates enough heat to heat the cabin, you know, and then it'll switch over to electric mode. You know, I don't think it, you know, the battery is going to work fine, you know, at sub-freezing temperatures. It doesn't need to be kept warm. Obviously, it'll work better. You'll have more range if it is warm, but, you know, it'll still work. So I think it's more about heating the cabin than heating the temperature or heating the battery. They have had some recalls on these things. And, you know, Chrysler's had some quality issues. But, you know, it's still a great vehicle.
I mean, I haven't had one in, if I've had one in the winter and I'm trying to remember, I don't think I've had one recently. Even though I've driven it quite a bit, I don't remember being an issue where it would not pop into EV mode, but I'm thinking it's going to be, you know, it's not, it just has to warm up a little. It's not like you're going to have to drive like 150 miles in a typical vehicle, even when they do have an EV button.
Yeah, it's going to be 5 or 10 minutes.
Right.
You know, just enough to warm up the engine.
It's a short amount of time and it will just kick over. If you like try to press the EV button, it was like, nope, sorry, can't do it right now. Too cold. Or it's, you know, it'll say like cabin cooling and heating or whatever. It won't let you do it, but it doesn't take long. So I'd imagine that even if it was excessively cold, if you can't use it right away, even during that short drive route, because it sounds like you don't do a lot of driving, then you're still going to get a good amount of hybrid use out of it, even if there is going to be more gas use during the cold winter months.
And then, you know, the Toyota Sienna, the current gen Sienna, is hybrid only. There's no just regular gas version of the Sienna. One big advantage, you know, if you're concerned about cold weather driving, you know, I'm presuming you live somewhere where it's, you know, where it gets snow and stuff, and you might actually want all-wheel drive, and you cannot get the Pacifica plug-in hybrid with all-wheel drive. It's front-wheel drive.
Whereas the other Pacifica has all-wheel drive.
Yeah. So, you can get the Sienna with either front or all-wheel drive. That might be a better option for you. Now, while I greatly applaud, you know, your recognition that a minivan is the best family hauler form factor, there are some other options for plug-in hybrids in the crossover space. The Kia Sorento is available as a plug-in hybrid. The Hyundai Santa Fe, and the Sorento is a 2.5 row. You know, it's got a third row. It's a little on the small side. But the Santa Fe is also available as a plug-in hybrid. So depending on how much size you need, there are some options there for plug-in hybrids in the crossover segment.
Yeah.
Get the minivan instead.
Yeah, definitely.
Get a minivan. Awesome.
Just do so it. Much Just get room. The minivan.
So much room for activities.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're concerned about reliability and quality with the Chrysler, just get the Sienna hybrid.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, Sam Greenwood. What are some good automotive news sites?
All the ones I write for.
Just straight up automotive news, like newsy news. Like that's a tough
question. Yeah.
You want like which executive has just left or been named to the board of blah, blah, blah. Or do you want a review of the vehicle?
Yeah. So hardcore, like in the weeds, like business stuff. It's the site is actually called Automotive News.
Yeah. That's truly it. That's the one that gives
autonews.com.
I think of automotive news is kind of the like the Wall Street Journal of the car world. It's just
that's
details,
a good way to describe it. Yeah.
Yeah. It does have a subscription. So you'll get like one or two articles. And then after that, you got to give them a little something, something.
A little
if you
boost.
Want to get all.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
on the other hand, you know, that does help them pay for a lot of good journalism. You know, they pay their reporters well, and they have a lot of people on their staff.
Yeah.
And they've been hiring people. So, you know, that, you know, support.
If you want
good
news, you gotta pay. They pay really well for freelancers. I haven't written anything for them, but they told me what they pay and it was good.
That's good.
So automotive news. If you're looking for like enthusiast site, there's The Drive. Of course, there's also, you know, Car and Driver, Road and Track, Motor Trend. Those have been, those three are sort of the big three for like a thousand
years. I like Motor
years.
One. I think Motor One gives a good Motor combination of like reviews and news and fun stuff. They have a good balance.
Yeah, Motor One's Motor really One. Good.
I like that.
I've written for Motor One too, so.
Samesies, which is not why I was pimping it out, but I do like it.
yeah, the team over Motor One, they're nice people. They do some good stuff. For them, there's a lot of actually really good good sites out there.
If you like some snark in there, you know, there's always the Autopian and Jalopnik.
Yep, Autopian, Jalopnik. I know they're Autopian's a little bit more enthusiast in the weeds. Like there was a whole article about why the carbureted Beetle and the fuel injected Beetle had different horsepower ratings.
Oh, geez.
And it has to do with how the ratings were measured. And by the time the fuel injected Beetle came out, they had changed the way they. Anyway, I loved it, but it's like that's like, you know, that's like super nerd car nerd, and and sort of first person stuff is the Autopian, and Jalopnik is sort of like that, but they're getting a little bit more less bratty kid. And that's because of the
less new bratty EIC. Kid. I love
yeah.
that.
The new ownership.
Less yeah.
the
bratty
the,
kid. Yeah. Okay.
And then the new EIC, Bob over there, Bob's great. I think I've written for them too. Yeah.
There you go.
So
all right.
There's some good.
Strangely enough, nobody mentioned my alma mater, Autoblog.
Autoblog's good too. Autoblog has a ton of news.
Yeah.
Autoblog's really good. Yeah.
They do a ton of news. Too.
Yeah, they do a ton of news. So, like, just things that are happening during the day, check out the old Autoblog.
Mm-hmm. All right. Jeff D asks, hey guys, thought of a question. Sam and Nicole can probably answer this best since Robbie lives in the warm climates.
So sit back and relax, Robbie. You can
I'm going to have a pina colada
have a drink
by my.
Or something. Yeah.
RAV4 Prime, how well does the heat pump system work in the frigid cold of like 20s and below in the dead of winter? Does it warm up fast? Will it work in full EV mode, or does the engine kick on when it's that cold anyway? We have a deposit down on a Prime for my wife, and I'm concerned her first complaint will be that it doesn't get warm enough in the real cold weather. Do you have any experience? Well, I have not driven a RAV4 Prime in winter weather, so I don't know. Have you had one?
Nicole? You know what? I have not driven one. I've driven it when it's cool, but not like this frigid, like, oh gosh, things are not going to work because it's too cold weather. But I think it's sort of the same, kind of like we were talking about with the Pacifica Hybrid a second ago. You know, the heat pump is going to warm something up. It's going to make it a little more quickly that you're going to be able to you know, be an E, like drive it like an EV and it's going to be fine, but you're still going to notice, I guess, performance issues when it's cold. Initially, it takes a few seconds for electric anythings to kind of find their footing when the weather is cold. Will they still work? Yes. Are you going to notice that it's not as great as when it was a nice balmy 70 degrees? Yep. You are going to notice the difference, but I don't think it's a difference that's so big that you think, oh God, I can't even drive this because it's wintertime and it's horrible. I don't think that happens.
Yeah. And I think, you know, 20s and below, you know, I mean, if you're getting down towards zero, you know, a heat pump, you know, is going to have limited capability there mm-hmm. in terms of generating or, you know, getting the heat. And so most likely, you know, if you've got the heat turned on, in those conditions, it's like I said, it's going to be like the Pacifica. Mm-hmm. It's probably going to run the engine for a few minutes until the engine warms up, generates, you know, heats up the coolant, you know, and then it can shut off and the heat pump can take that and get the heat from that into your cabin. So it will be more efficient. It's probably not good. Let's put it this way. It's not going to warm up any slower than a hybrid RAV4 or, you know, any other comparable vehicle.
Exactly. It's not like you're going to get something else that does so much better. Like, well, I went with this one. If I'd gone with that other guy, nope, you're going to sort of notice that same performance issue no mm-hmm. matter which one you go with.
All right. Last one from Todd111. I have a question for the podcast. I have a base 2023 Subaru Forester, which has physical knobs for the HVAC and stereo.
Yeah.
Being able to operate the stereo and HVAC without taking my eyes off the road was one of the reasons we chose this SUV over some of the others in its class. I've heard the topic of knobs and buttons versus haptic and screens discussed, but I can't get a definitive answer. Well, there is a definitive answer. Knobs and buttons are better. Simple as that. Mm-hmm. Many journalists claim that getting rid of buttons is a cost-saving measure, but I've heard others claim that manufacturers do it more for aesthetic reasons. Of course, we've also heard some manufacturers add back knobs and buttons, after complaints from consumers and journalists. I'm wondering, do manufacturers really save that much money by eliminating physical controls? And if so, how much? Or is it more of a push by designers who think it looks cool aesthetically? I'd enjoy hearing everyone's takes on this topic. Thanks for the weekly entertainment. So, yes, it does save a significant amount of money. The cost of engineering all those individual knobs and switches and buttons, as well as, you know, you've got to have, you know, wiring going to every one of those controls, you know, that complicates the assembly process. There's more parts that have to be built and put together. engineering and validating all that stuff, you know, making sure that, you know, it's going to continue, those things are going to continue to work properly for 100, 150,000 miles of use. You know, it's that does add cost. And that is probably, I would say, I think when Tesla started doing that, when they launched the Model S, I think that that was actually their primary reason for doing it, to get that cost out of there. You know, more recently, you know, certainly other manufacturers appreciate the cost savings, mm-hmm. but they've also heard from consumers that mistakenly like that kind of thing. And there's obviously some aesthetic reasons for wanting to do that. But cost is really the biggest driver.
Yeah, it's because, and you don't have to regionalize, because you can just regionalize software, mm-hmm. where you don't have to like, oh, we got to make, well, in this country, we probably need to change the words on this, or we got to make this, you know, and this, it's just there's a lot of money involved. And if you can reduce the money, but the fact that people are complaining, like I complain, and hopefully Todd 111 or 111 or 111, whatever, Todd is also, anytime I get in a car,
Todd 111.
111. There's maybe some he's sort 111. Of physical controls.
7-1. Okay, sorry. I got on a tangent. Okay.
Anyway, physical controls are better because like you said, you can like, because you have muscle memory of where that control is all the time. You always know, oh, this is the HVAC, this is the volume control, everything's there. Whereas if you do that with, I mean, you can get the muscle control as they, you know, they start certain of making sure the HVAC is always up, like the climate controls, but you're mm-hmm. still bouncing around. You don't have anything to grip. So now you're setting your, like your thumb or something against something on the dash in order to push a fake button to push a piece of glass in order to change the temperature. Whereas if you could just like turn something, you're like, I can grab it and turn it. My hand mm-hmm. doesn't bounce around as I hit a bump or anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, if you're driving something like a VW ID4, you know, where it's got that little ledge at the bottom of the screen that's got the touch controls for the volume and temperature on there. You know, when you're going to hit something on the screen, you inevitably end up, you know, bracing your, you know, using your thumb or one of your fingers to brace your hand on that as you're bouncing around, and then hitting some other control instead of the one you actually meant to hit on the screen.
Yeah.
You know, the haptic stuff, you know, like what Nissan's got in the Ariya, works reasonably well. You know, especially the ones that are on the console, mm-hmm. you know, because you're not reaching out to hit those, you know, you still have to look down at them to find them because you can't do it by feel.
Yeah.
But you know, at least, you know, you do get some feedback that, yeah, it's registered that you've pressed that control. So that helps, but I'd still rather have physical controls.
I'd rather have physical controls. If I could, I just like, you know, when you have to, they've got them on the steering wheel and I'm forever like, which button am I hitting? Wait, this is the volume. No, wait, that's the track on the audio. Wait, crud. If I could just like reach over and flip the volume button and, you know.
Yeah. And especially, you know, if they're trying to use, you know, a few limited physical controls for multiple uses, like, you know, like Tesla does and like Rivian does. I've got an R1S in the driveway right now and, you know, they've got the, you know, roller and rocker controls on each spoke of the steering wheel that are, there's no labels on them. And
I am not a fan of the multiple things doing different things depending on what mode you're in. Cause I forever think that's what I want to reach to turn
in the right
off.
Mode. No.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, I'm turning the volume up. Nope. I just turn the heat up to like lava temperature. Oh, wait, it's confusing. It's not intuitive at all. Just give me a button that does a thing or a knob that does a thing. That's what mm-hmm. I want. That's what yep. I want. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Totally agree. All right.
Team Todd 11, 111.
111 team. How do you say? I need to know. I don't know. 111, 111, 111, 110. I don't know. I don't know what this name is. This is too confusing. Todd Nicholas, confusing name. Don't be a Volkswagen. Okay.
Team Todd. I'm just say Team Todd.
Team Todd.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.